Hello and welcome to our first and only ever podcast. My name is Ben Crocker.
And I am Sydney Costa.
And we're here to talk to you guys all about misconceptions surrounding school counselors. Specifically, we're going to start talking about the history behind what happened to bring school counselors to the modern day school counseling, from guidance all the way to all the jobs that school counselors have today. And then we're going to talk a little bit, we're going to have an interview for you actually from a school counselor down Bucksport, Maine in the middle school level. Then we're going to talk about the current state of school counseling and give you a little advocacy plan. So I think we're just going to dive right into the history. Sydney, you want to start us off?
Sure. So Frank Parsons is known as like the father of guidance, and he began connecting students to jobs around the 1900s, which is kind of where this all started, began the guidance counselor role.
And then in the 1930s, E.G. Williamson expanded on Parsons' vocational tenets when he created the trait and factor theory, which emphasized school counselors' vocational roles further.
And that's something we talked about in our career class this semester.
It is a lot of that, yeah.
And then Carl Rogers came around and he brought in the person-centered approach, so dealing with the whole person instead of just certain characteristics about them.
And that dramatically changed not just the scope of school counseling, but the entire counseling sphere, don't you think?
Yeah, I think counseling as a whole began to shift during that period.
Absolutely. And then in 1952, the American School Counseling Association was created, and the School Counselor became an official journal promoting the school counselor identity.
And a big history factor about that is that Sputnik happened.
Yes,
and that was where school counselors were kind of tailored towards examining students who were interested in math and science, or where they had a strength.
Schools wanted to focus on innovation, so counselors were trying to draw STEM sort of strong students into the programs. And then in the 1970s, school enrollment decreased, and schools began to eliminate school counselor positions, and school counselors began to take on additional roles of an administrative nature to keep jobs, which many are around today. So, I don't know, we think about like scheduling. I think that was one of those roles that came in at that time.
Yeah.
Do you have any others? Can't really think of any others off the top of our head, but those administrative roles that don't really fit underneath the school counselor's sphere. Then in 1975, the Educational Act for All Handicapped Children expanded services again, as schools were mandated to provide free public education for all children, especially exceptional children.
In the 1980s and the 1990s, additional legislation and funding happened to increase the roles. And in 1983, with the A Nation at Risk paper, the school counselors were given the role of testing, which we have learned that it always is not included in our role, actually.
Mm-hmm. And then in 1990, ASCA, or the American School Counselor Association, emphasizes using school counselor instead of guidance counselor due to the nature of work school counselors are doing.
And that we also learned about at the MESCA conference, where they emphasize getting rid of guidance and putting in the school word.
Yeah, they even had t-shirts. They're for sale. They're pretty sweet. They like crossed out the guidance counselor and they put school instead.
Was sweet.
Yeah, they were awesome. So a lot of the misconceptions that happen surrounding school counselor these days, really you can see the role of the school counselor throughout the history of its profession has changed in many ways. It keeps getting expanded, and then another role is added on. And then it's during that time when school enrollment decreased, they had to take on more roles to stay relevant. And now we're at the modern day school counselor that oftentimes they aren't doing exactly what school counselors are supposed to be doing.
No, I don't think they are at all.
Yeah. So it's kind of crazy to see. It's interesting to see, looking back at the history, how...
roller coaster ride it's been.
Right, exactly. Thank you. Yeah. So this podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about the misconceptions. And I know that as a school, when people ask me in what program I'm studying in college, and I say, oh, school counseling, they're like, what's the question you always get asked?
You mean guidance counselor?
Yeah. Oh, what are you gonna do?
That?
What are you gonna do with your school counselor degree? It's like, yeah. I'm gonna be a school counselor with my master's in school counseling. I think that's.
Yeah, I don't think they understand that it's a master's.
Yeah.
7 years of schooling.
Right.
That's a lot.
Yeah, 60-hour credits. It takes a lot of work to become a school counselor, and I don't think a lot of people are still in that guidance counselor specific career counseling role.
Yes. It's hard to change the past and form other like perspectives about your job with the history this area has.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So to start that off, we're going to go right into an interview with a school counselor down at Bucksport Middle School. And he'll talk about his experiences and... Yeah, without further ado, here's Stan Pelletier from Bucksport Middle School. All right, so I'm here with Stan Pelletier. He's the school counselor at Bucksport Middle School in Bucksport, Maine. And I'm just going to ask him a few questions about misconceptions around school counseling. So first, I'd like to ask, what is your role as a school counselor in this school?
Yeah, that's a big question. Mm-hmm. And I think school counselors have a number of roles in schools, and it's different from what, you know, there are some differences between schools, and I'll also say that I think that the role of the school counselor has changed and really expanded a lot over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that one of my primary roles here is the school, as the school counselor, is to be this sort of advocate for students' mental health.
Mm-hmm.
That's the drum that I have to beat constantly.
Yep.
I need to make sure that the social and emotional health of students is considered at every turn.
Mm-hmm.
I think that job becomes more and more important as the years go by. I think because of societal pressures that make it so that our students are arriving here with fewer skills on mm-hmm. average in terms of social and emotional health than they did just 15 or 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're starting from a more difficult position. I think we're seeing the parents of many of our kids now have had fewer social and emotional resources.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're raising kids. And there's sort of a generational add-on effect there.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that has to do with decreased resources that are allocated to schools generally,
mm-hmm.
and to mental health and social emotional growth, particularly
mm-hmm.
in school systems. I'll say that currently here at Bucksport Middle School, there's a lot of attention being given to social and emotional development. However, it falls upon the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still facing declining resources. So more and more is being asked of our teachers. School counselors are expected to be advocates and sort of support people for providing of social emotional services. And I think increasingly it's also falling upon teachers to carry this
mm-hmm.
To serve this role,
that load.
Yeah, and school counselors we're finding ourselves in a sort of, you know, more consultative or supportive role
mm-hmm.
to try to support teachers and provide them with knowledge, training, and backup, as it were, for their sort of frontline interactions yeah. with kids in the social,
facilitating emotional. Those sorts of things in the classroom.
Yeah.
Perfect. So this podcast is specifically about common misconceptions that people might have about what school counselors actually do. Mm-hmm. I know we're talking a lot about moving away from the guidance counselor career specific mm-hmm. based school counselor. So I just wanted to ask, what sort of common misconceptions have you heard in your career that you've had to overcome or mm-hmm. sort of explain to people about what specifically you do?
Right. I think one of the things that maybe as a profession we've always struggled with a little bit is blowing our own horn, or really being our own PR department,
right.
and explaining to people what we do. So I think there are misconceptions about school counselors, a variety of them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people think that we work more as therapists, mm-hmm. Or that we have some sort of magical powers to fix kids.
Right.
So that's at one end, and whether it's parents or teachers that that think that, I think our job then becomes to educate about what exactly it is we do, how that differs from the job or mm-hmm. role of a therapist, or a social worker. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I think there's people that many people that think that the they're maybe picturing school counselors in the kind of old school guidance counselor model,
right.
and thinking, well, we could cut that.
We don't
need that service. That we can do that now on our own or on the internet or mm-hmm. whatever, and we don't really need that anymore. So it's sort of a weird dichotomy, but at the end of the day, I think a lot of people don't really understand what it is we do.
Right.
And I think we need to do a better job collectively of explaining that to people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you ever experienced a specific misconception here at Bucksport or in another job that you may have had?
I've had situations where members of the school board sitting on the curriculum committee were trashing the profession of school counseling mm-hmm. and really just not only not aware of what it is we actually do to help kids, mm-hmm. but really hostile towards
yeah.
the profession and denigrating the profession. And I found myself in the position of having to really kind of stand up for the profession, mm-hmm. and explain this to people who are in positions of authority, who have a lot of power to make decisions around funding, around the direction of services mm-hmm. and student programs within the school district.
Yeah.
So.
I know throughout my couple years in grad school, that seems to be a central theme, that professional advocacy needs to be at the forefront of what a lot of counselors are doing. So
yeah, and I guess I've taken that seriously enough that I have for a number of years now been committed to serving in roles with my professional organizations at the mm-hmm. state level.
Yeah.
There are many different professional organizations either at the national or state level that we can become involved with, and I've chosen to become involved with the Maine Counseling Association mm-hmm. primarily. I do have memberships in other professional organizations, but I've served on the executive board of the Maine Counseling Association, which is the state branch of the American Counseling mm-hmm. Association, as an umbrella group for not only school counselors, but clinical counselors, college admissions counselors, a variety of
right.
professionals. Under our counseling umbrella,
mm-hmm.
And I've served as the president of the Maine Counseling Association. And my current job with the association, there always seems to be another job popping up,
mm-hmm.
For a volunteer organization like this. And so currently I'm the public policy chairperson, so
mm-hmm.
I'm in charge of keeping track of what sort of legislative issues are going on that impact our profession at the state and national mm-hmm. level, and informing our membership and organizing either support or opposition for certain legislative items, you know, to try to advance our professional our professional standing or legislative agenda that directly impacts either counseling professionals or the clients we work with.
Perfect. Is there anything you would change about your role here at Bucksport, or something you have advocated for?
Yes, I guess I can give an example of something that's worked and then something that I'm still working on. So when I first came here, I think it was 2010, and it was as part of a consolidation, the school consolidation that was going on a number of years ago. And there was no classroom guidance, which I felt was a big lack. It was a detriment to the kids here that they weren't having an opportunity, all the students, to form some sort of relationship with their school counselor. And we were just leaving a lot of opportunities on the table in terms of, you know, the ability to enhance social and emotional development. And I think that's particularly important at the middle level.
Yeah.
So that was one of my goals when I first got here, was let's see what we can do about getting classroom guidance. And I did face, again, there was some opposition to that on the school board.
Yeah.
With certain members of the school board were sort of reactionary in that situation. Eventually, I was able to work with the curriculum coordinator to develop a process for essentially making a sales pitch to the district leadership, administrators, and school board members for the sort of build the case for why we need to have classroom guidance here at Bucksport Middle School. I ended up getting what I was looking for a lot more quickly than I expected, and I'm not going to pretend that it was owing to any really thoughtful process by the district leadership. I found out about a week after sort of asking for this that I was going to get it. I think the reason had more to do with budget cuts and other programs like the tech ed program being stripped out, Spanish being stripped out, and other things. And they essentially needed
to fill that void.
They needed someone to basically provide teachers with blocks where they could plan, do lesson planning. So it was sort of a double-edged situation.
Right.
So, I guess it's something I'm still working on is I think it's really important that school counselors have a seat at the table for important discussions that happen at the district level that impact students' mental health and social and emotional growth. And we don't always have a seat at the table.
Right.
I think those decisions are often made by administrators who have varying levels of training and expertise when it comes to mental health and social emotional development. I don't think it's a great way for leadership to function, so that you have your, you know, collectively speaking, we have all this expertise in the district of social workers, of school counselors, of clinical counselors who are on the school, the district's payroll, but these people are not consulted in their area of expertise when it comes to, you know, some pretty significant issues that impact students' social and emotional health. So I think we're leaving, you know, we certainly do try to assert ourselves to have a place at the table to be part of these discussions
right.
doesn't always work out.
Yep. His final question is, do you have any clinical or counselor-based supervision outside of administrative support here at school?
Yes, is the short answer. I consider the administrative supervisory interactions I have are vastly different. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't meet that need at all.
Right.
In terms of clinical counseling supervision. I happen to have I am clinically licensed as an LCPC in the state of Maine, mm-hmm. and I have a national counselor certification. That's something that's been very important to me in my personal professional development. And I maintain membership in a clinical group, a supervision group that mm-hmm. meets monthly. I will say that I've enjoyed good support from various principals with mm-hmm. whom I've worked, who've allowed me the release time to,
yeah.
you know, take one afternoon a month to leave early and go sit in and have my supervision group mm-hmm. Participate in that. So that's been really critical, and you know, I've been able to maintain my clinical licensure. Mm-hmm. In large part because of that,
yeah.
You know, that arrangement.
That support, yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Occasionally, there are some other clinically licensed counselors who work within our district, but we're usually so busy that we don't have any predictable time to meet.
Right.
It's nice to be able to pick up the phone and consult with someone mm-hmm. If I have an issue that may, you know, that I would feel more comfortable with more people than just me thinking about, mm-hmm. That especially with respect to like ethical or
right.
Or legal questions involving counseling. So that's you know, those are really useful supports,
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't recommend that anybody do this job without them.
Right.
I also get a lot of support through my professional organizational membership mm-hmm. with the Maine Counseling Association, and I'm occasionally consulted by, there is actually an ethics board, mm-hmm. an ethics committee within the structure of our professional organization. I'm sometimes consulted as, part of that group mm-hmm. in terms of providing feedback to counselors about ethical issues that they face in mm-hmm. their practice. There's also a really useful resource that I can use where if I contact the chair of the ethics committee with the Maine Counseling Organization, Maine Counseling Association, I can get anonymous feedback mm-hmm. on ethical questions.
Awesome.
That way as well. So
that's great.
I make heavy use of supervisory contacts, mm-hmm. and I recommend that any professionals, to me it's essential.
Yeah.
I can't imagine building a professional life without that.
Right. That's something they're definitely pushing on us as grad students mm-hmm. as well. So mm-hmm. it's good to hear. Well, that's all the questions I have. I want to thank you for your time. It's been great. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Well, that was a great interview. Thanks, Stan, for letting us interview about those topics. And I think it'd be a great idea to talk about how he said that the role of him being a school counselor is a big question.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the podcast a little bit about the history and how school counselors' roles kind of get, I don't know, confused along the way with what they really should be doing. And he was able to clarify to us exactly what he did specifically towards the social emotional component and advocating for his students, which was great.
Yeah, I think he gave great examples of how it is a double-edged sword dealing with this field, and how he himself had to stand up to the board and, you know, the other teachers and just everyone in his school community to let him know what he's actually doing.
Right. I think that was a really powerful segment on that he talked about, just having to constantly be explaining what your role is, because there's so much, it's so muddy what everyone thinks. Everyone thinks a different thing at what the school counselor should be doing. And so do we cut the role because we think they only do career, or do we give them more because of how important they are in the school? I think that's kind of unfortunate that it always falls on the school counselor.
Yeah, and I could see if a school counselor is a person who isn't always one to, you know, stand up for themselves and get their point across, I could see how that might be the first job to go if they're not advocating for themselves inside the school.
Right. And also, we were talking about misconceptions before we were doing this podcast, and one of the ones that always came up was that school counselors have the magic powers to fix all the kids in the school. So it was funny to have another school counselor working in the role see those sorts of feelings.
Expressing his magical powers.
Right, to just fix everything that happens.
Yeah.
So we thought that was a really great interview, just talking about some real life experience and the things that he has to do to let people understand.
Yeah.
So this is starting to get more into the current state of the misconceptions surrounding school counselor, the school counselor profession. And Sydney and I had the opportunity to go to the Maine School Counselors Association conference the other week, and these topics of counselor misconceptions came up often.
Very frequently.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about Danielle Duarte?
Yes. So Danielle focused on just dividing guidance versus school, really, and she talked about how guidance was more college focused and more disciplining the students and scheduling, you know, preparing them. But the school counselor, they're more often now, they're trauma informed, it's comprehensive, and they deal with the whole person and the whole child. So they're more dealing with their mental health, the social emotional context, and just not really worrying about the future, but worrying about the now and the person as a whole.
And just so people know, Danielle Duarte is former school counselor and counselor grant project director, and now she's getting her doctorate in education at Harvard. So she was the keynote speaker. And another really great presenter that we heard was Terry Chorzynski, who's the 2015 Counselor of the Year. And she was talking about how a lot of people are just unsure about the realm of school counseling, so they always refer back to that Frank Parsons era guidance, focused vocational guidance sort of thing, instead of learning what the new ASCA model is for school counseling, which in reality is very integrative and it's very focused. And it has three key pillars, which are career readiness, social and emotional support, and then academic support. So school counselors are really in their program supposed to hit on all three of those things, but as a person who doesn't really know, they always just refer back to that career specific.
Yeah, and if it's not something you want to do, it's really easy to skip over and not care about what's actually going on, you know?
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
All right. So from some of the research Ben and I did, we found very popular misconceptions about school counselors, and we just wanted to share them with you, you know, not discuss them, but just to put them out there. I mean, we kind of found them funny.
Yeah. So here they are, just some of the funniest and most common or interesting misconceptions. The first one we found is that school counselors only work with at-risk students, when in reality, their job is to connect with every single student in the school.
Yep, and then they just coordinate schedules and tests, and I don't think I have taken one schedule class.
No, there are no scheduling
in
classes
graduate school so far.
In our curriculum.
No.
The other one is that they only help with academic or career needs, when, as you heard in the interview, it's a very, the social and emotional needs of students are a huge component as well.
And that they just discipline students, in other words, you know, fix their problems.
With their magic wand.
Yeah, that's what I think of. Harry Potter.
Yes. Again, that school counselor is just a guidance counselor in that it's only career focused and trying to get kids into school as in college. And
I think the best one that we read was that they stir up and validate student drama.
Their only use is
stir the pot
and make things worse. They don't actually know what they're doing.
I mean, spending 8 hours a day doing that.
No wonder the schools have such issues these days.
It's funny.
It is. Wow, Sydney. Those were pretty funny. But you know what? It's not actually that funny because this is going to be our reality as school counselors. We're going to have to be constantly telling everybody
that we don't fix problems magically.
And we don't take scheduling classes. So what do?
Well, I mean, the great place to start
is with an advocacy plan.
You're right, Ben. You're totally right.
Yeah.
How would we do that?
So one of the best ways that school counselors can clarify their roles is through talking with their community about role clarification and the three pillars in the ASCA model and how they're not just career counselors, but they really are supposed to do more. And these can come, this role clarification can come in the role, settings of presentations with the school board, presentations with your people in your school, meetings with principals and other administration, and putting out brochures into the community about your counseling program.
I think it would be important to send those home, you know, like first day of school packet, so that parents are aware mm-hmm. that you're there and exactly what you provide for services.
Mm-hmm. I think another thing is Stan kind of touched upon his roles in professional organizations, but being involved in MESCA, which is the Maine School Counselor Association, the ACA, the American Counseling Association, and then the American School Counselor Association, or ASCA, can be ways to back up your advocacy with professional support.
Yeah, and I mean, at MESCA, it felt like everyone was aware of what's going on because they're all going through the same things, and it was easy to just talk to people, and it was just a reminder of what you're doing and why you're doing it and how it's important that you're doing it. Mm-hmm. So being a member also gives you some gratification in your job.
Absolutely.
That will keep you going.
Right. Another way is through professional and clinical supervision. So Stan also touched upon that in his interview, how his he's advocated for himself to get outside clinical supervision so that he can talk about his counseling needs outside of an administrator, principal sort of context.
Yeah, definitely getting someone who has a similar background to him, you know, a similar education, qualifications, mm-hmm. There you can relate on a different level than a principal and a school counselor, I feel like.
Right. The final thing is just making sure that everybody is universally using the term school counselor and advocating for that. I think, was it in Terry's presentation? She was talking about Michelle Obama and Michelle Obama's advocacy for school counselors and how school counseling, it's the first time that the term school counselor has been used in a bill like 2 years ago,
yes,
I think.
Yes. Which is why the whole School Counselor of the Year started to bring awareness to the topic and
right.
highlight the individuals who are, you know, really taking their job by the reins and just doing the best they can, and it's good that people are getting like called out upon for their great services.
Right. Buy those shirts. School counselor, not guidance counselor.
No more guidance.
Kick
it out.
It's done. Well, that's all we have on our misconceptions surrounding school counseling. I'd like to thank you all for joining us.
Yeah, hopefully you guys enjoyed it and didn't fall asleep.
There will not be another episode dropping soon, so sorry to disappoint, but it's been fun. Yeah, it's been fun.
It's been fun. Thanks for listening.